You've entered Bookstorm with Kristen Civiletto and me, Chris Storm. This is a podcast devoted to best-selling books that matter, books that make a difference. We're diving down deep with beloved authors about their stories. We're exposing hot-button topics and heartfelt themes, the issues that affect each of us in our own lives, as siblings, parents, partners, friends, as human beings. We're braving new ideas, fresh thoughts, hard lessons, and important truths. Those kinds of things that stay with us long after we turn the last page and close the book. Welcome back to Bookstorm Podcast, all of you fiction lovers. We are super excited about who we have with us here today. We have Christopher Reich and his new book coming out the day this podcast is aired on April 1st. And it's pretty cool because we're talking to Christopher Reich today, and he is in Zermatt, Switzerland, getting ready to do some publicity videos for this book. So that's going to start to intrigue you. And Christopher, welcome.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And I want to give our listeners a little bit of information about you as the author and a person, because I think your life is very exciting and pretty cool. Christopher was born in Tokyo. He spent his youth between California and Switzerland. He attended the Outbound School of East Africa and climbed Mount Kenya. How old were you when you did that?
15.
15 years old. Wow. He went back to attend Georgetown in the School of Foreign Service. Another very intriguing thing. Got his MBA from University of Texas, then returned to Switzerland and Hong Kong, where he worked for Union Bank. Now, I'm mentioning this because of his very first book, which was a huge hit. His first book was about the super secret world of Swiss banking. It hit the New York Times bestseller, sat there for 14 weeks, and a million copies were sold. And we're very happy that that's about when Christopher decided to pursue writing full time. Is that about right?
Very accurate. For better or worse, that is my life. Wow.
We're very happy about that. He now has 14 acclaimed bestsellers. He's got an International Thrillers Award, of course. And his book, The Take, is currently in production for a Netflix series directed by the Oscar and BAFTA winner, Edward Berger. Another wow. There's a lot of wows going on here. Booklist and Library Journal have given this book rave reviews. And I just want to summarize with what Library Journal has to say. They couldn't have said it better. This book, Matterhorn, the pace is relentless. The spy craft is in full gear. Yep, sure is. And that's why we love it so. Welcome, Christopher. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. That's a very nice introduction. So I hope I can be worthy of that.
You already are.
I know. We loved this book. Chris and I have actually been talking about it for a few weeks. I like to give our listeners just a little bit of the background of what's going on in your story. And I promise not to give away any spoilers. That is very hard to do. So I'm going to keep it kind of brief. And if you want to add anything at the end, we would love it if you did that. Now, in your story, we meet Robbie Steinhardt. He is living a rather peaceful life in an alpine village. He is tending cattle. He lives quietly amongst his neighbors. What his neighbors don't know, though, is that he used to be a high-level CIA agent, and he was known then as Mac Decker, his real name. Now, he made a heartbreaking decision to disappear and leave behind his family, and maybe it was for their safety, but he had his reasons. But Max soon learns that his son, Will, may have followed in his footsteps, something that he did not know. Now, Will had an encounter on the Matterhorn, and now Mac needs some answers. He is going to try to figure out what was Will doing up there, and why did he encounter an arch enemy of Max, known as Ilya Ivashka. Now, they were on the same trail. This Ilya was once a very trusted friend of Mac, but he is now anything but. So Mac returns to the field to find out what these secrets may have been, but he finds that there's a threat that could trigger a mass casualty event that is about to be unleashed. So now he is facing his own personal Matterhorn in terms of confronting double agents, a lost love, and a whole lot of secrets in danger. Would you like to add anything to that summary?
Yeah, sometimes I can't. I don't know how I think of these stories. No, but that's a great summary.
Excellent.
You know, I spend a lot of time here in Switzerland, and I'm a bit of a mountain climber. And so I often come to, I'm sitting here looking out the window right now at the Matterhorn. It's always been a mysterious, it has a presence. It makes me ask questions about who I am, what can I do, what am I capable of? And so as a writer, somehow that filtered into my desire to tell a really great page turner set here on one of the most exciting places on earth. So that was kind of the impetus. You know, you nailed the story dead on about a man who has to sacrifice his entire life, give up his family to hide for their sake, but also to keep alive because he just knows too much and the bad people are after him. So where does he hide? Here, deep in the high alpine valleys of Switzerland.
Yeah, and I loved what you said about the presence of that mountain because I have seen it from afar and it has a looming danger to it, but also you're fascinated. You cannot look away. So I love that you're there. I wish we could get a glimpse out your window.
Well, you know, I can't move my laptop out, but believe me, it's right there looking down. I was just taking some videos of it. It's lovely. So yeah, it's great to be back. That's for sure.
We'll be looking for those videos that have to do with the book Matterhorn and check that out. So let me tell for our listeners, yes, it's a thrill ride. It's boiling with secrets, schemes, and plots. The secret world of espionage and counterintelligence. And yet, the reader could relate. There was an important theme in your story about the abandonment of loyalty, both professional and personal. In other words, turning to a different side, declaring a friend an enemy without giving away spoilers. I had to ask you as the writer, what caused your characters to make a sudden change in beliefs and relationships? And even for all of us in the real world, we've all done this sometimes. You could say you stopped working at a certain location instantly. Something happened. You get a divorce. You move out of state. You lose a friend. Is this also dangerous to make a sudden change based on temporary emotions, or is sometimes necessary?
Well, you know, with my books, I'm dealing, really the story takes place on a number of levels. Most important and most engaging is the personal level. Who are these people? What conflicts are they going through? What problems do they have? But it's also on a bigger international security level. And so here in Matterhorn, you have really both those coming to play. You have Mac Decker, former CIA agent, hiding. He discovers that one of his old friends and now foes has come back kind of to life and is after him. So, but why do people, I think your question is, why do people defy their loyalty? Why do they be loyal one second and then give it up the next? And I think it's interesting because we all like to think, oh, we're loyal, let's say, national ideas, and we love the United States and we stand up for that or other countries. But when it comes down to it, when you make your choices, so much depends upon what your heart tells you or what your ego tells you. It's like, this is what I need to do to feel good about myself, or in the case of Matterhorn, to get revenge.
Oh, that's a great answer. And, you know, this is what we love about even your characters with big lives that we can still relate. We step inside and take that journey with them. We become the CIA agent, and that's half the fun of it. Thanks for that.
Christopher, I want to pick up on something you just said. I did love the parallels between what was happening on the international stage and then what was happening in some of the private ones. These themes of like possession and control and secrets, perceptions and strengths and weaknesses. And I wanted to kind of zero in on these secrets. Ilya had plenty, and he believed that sometimes the real value in a secret was harboring it. and having others wonder what it is that you know. Does that level of gamesmanship take a toll on people? Do all your relationships become transactional?
You know, I thought about that. It's a great question when I was writing this book, because people are just people. We're all just normal human beings. But when you give certain people a high level of responsibility, acting for your nation's best interest, and that involves perhaps killing other people, you know, eliminating enemies, all of a sudden you are given this tremendous power, the power of a life and death, saying you can kill somebody and it's fine. You know, you're acting on our best interest. But then you take that helicopter ride out of the war zone. You come back to Washington, D.C. or Beirut or Tel Aviv. You're having dinner. It's like, who am I? Am I this guy eating a nice piece of fish looking at the beach? Or am I, you know, this instrument of national policy? I think that plays big, you know, big games with your head, and it involves your relationships. So you're looking at your best friend. It's like, who am I, your best friend, or am I someone that can control your life? And so that's what I wanted. Those are the themes exactly that I wanted to, you know, discuss and have fun, you know, in Matterhorn. Let me just say this. I grew up reading, you know, I say I grew up reading the classics, Frederick Forsyth, Tom Clancy, John Grisham. I love a page turner. So my books are all about, you start the book, I want you to engage with the characters, then it's pedal to the metal, excitement. You're learning a lot, but it's really fun in an international setting. So this book, Matterhorn, I thought was one of my tightest, most fast-paced books, great themes, but really fun characters. You know, Ilya, this Russian guy, is kind of dissolute. He knows what he has done is bad, and it's eating at him from the inside. And yet, you know, like all of us, he's trying to survive. He wants to win at all costs. So it's this great gamesmanship between Mac Decker and Ilya Vashka's former best friend.
Yeah. In fact, you see across the pages, Ilya suffering because he couldn't make some of those distinctions between the transactional side and the real meaning of life, these personal things. And to see that unwind, I thought was really fascinating in terms of character development and plot.
You know, it's amazing what you will do to get even, and how you will sacrifice your own soul just for that momentary feeling of, yes, I did it. You know,
yes.
I got him. And so that's what Ilya is all about. It's like he's, you know, he knows he's made mistakes, but this is his one last chance to prove to the one person that kind of he looks up to as a big brother that, hey, maybe I am better than you.
Yeah, we all love a protagonist, but we have to admit, we love the antagonist too. We love the bad guy. We're trying to figure his mind out. I really love the character Mac. He felt alive again when he renewed his life purpose. First, he takes up rock climbing, makes him feel alive. Then he joins the Marines. Then, when he returns to the CIA world after a long absence, he feels alive again. It made the reader realize, hey, we all need a life purpose. They all can't be quite as exciting as Max or Christopher Reich's, let's say. But what is it about this life purpose, this goal? Can we really exist contentedly without one?
It's hard. And one of the fun things about these books, I think you see they're really adrenaline rides. And the characters depend upon adrenaline to get them going. In this book, poor Mac Decker, he's had to hide away for 9 years to protect his family. He's had to give up everything he knew, his existence. Who am I? What do I do best? I think we all are kind of what we do best. You know I feel great when I sit down going to work and I write on a, you know, yellow legal pad, longhand, old school. And, but boy, when the flow starts happening, when my laptop's a mile away, when my phone is a mile away, it's like, gosh, I'm doing the one thing that I'm good at. And it makes me feel really good. And I go home. It's funny. And I go to my wife and I'll walk in and she could tell me in 1 second, she knows, oh, you had a good day, or that was not a good day. And I think Mac feels the same way. It's like he's been isolated, but now he's back in the game. He has a reason to prove who he is, how good he is, you know, and to kind of right past wrongs. And I think we all feel that way when we could be our best selves. That's what, you know, being human is all about.
And it takes a little courage, though, doesn't it? Because there was a line that kept coming up in the book. And of course, we all loved it. It ain't going to get any easier just looking at it. Now he's talking about the mountain climb, but this could almost be translated to any life purpose, any goal that you have. Maybe if it's too easy, is it even worth it?
Well, you know, that's from my real life. And when I grew up, I was a little nerd with glasses and braces, and I shopped for clothes in the Husky section. And my brother, Bill, was a great athlete. So he was, and we would come to Switzerland. And one summer we were in Arosa, which is another beautiful town. And my uncle, or my great uncle, who is Swiss, was president of the Swiss Alpine Club. And so he announces one day, we're going to go climb this mountain. And I'm 12, and I couldn't climb, a 5 foot dune at the beach, you know, but here we go off and we started walking and walking, and about halfway up the mountain, everyone is in front of me. I mean, I see this line of people and they're gone. They round a turn. It's at, 10,000 feet. The wind is blowing. It's cold. And my dad is gone. I sat there and it was like a big moment in my life where I realized no one's going to come help you. And my dad then came back and he said, Chris, it's not going to get any easier just looking at it. You have to go. And all of a sudden, like that changed my whole life from being kind of a, I don't want to say a couch potato, but feeling sorry for myself to realizing it's in my head. If I want to do it, I can do it. And I think my life changed on that instant.
I like that. Thanks to your dad. That's a little life lesson for all of us.
Yeah, he was a pretty tough guy, though.
Christopher, I want to go back to something you were alluding to earlier. You know, for all of the international intrigue and the threats, this book conveys much about the personal sacrifice of, our military members or our diplomatic service or our intelligence officers. Are we asking too much of these individuals in terms of what sometimes they must give up?
I don't think so. I think we live in an era where we try to make everyone a hero when they're just doing their job. I mean, when you're going to go be a diplomat or going to go work for the CIA, you know what you're signing up for. And I mean, yes, you're making a sacrifice, but you're also enjoying what you're doing. Very few people are able to sit there and say, I'm carrying the weight of the government or even let's talk around or the free world on my shoulders. There's a lot of gratification in that. Okay. These people work hard to get to those positions. They don't just give them out. I went to Georgetown School of Foreign Service. Out of 100 people that take that test, 2 pass. Okay. So it's hard to get in there. Are we asking a lot? Yes. But I think they know that. Now let's divide it up. I mean, okay, Navy SEALs, things like that, we're really asking a lot of them. Okay. They're really putting it on the line. Diplomats, I mean, not so much. I think they work hard. We all work hard. I mean, when I was starting to write my book, I would just disappear for 15 hours a day. My first book, Numbered Account, Chris, where are you? I'm writing. Well, I loved it and I wouldn't trade that. So, this is one of my little pet peeves about I'm thankful to a lot of people, but we're all just doing our job and we know that's our job going in. So there.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting too, because Mac was always weighing his inaction. So if he didn't get engaged, then we could have a mass casualty. We could have an extraordinary event that changed history. And so I love that there was that weighing going on in his mind all the time. And I'm sure that a lot of people in these professions probably go through that as well.
Oh, I agree. There's a great, Edmund Burke quote about, all it takes is for a good man to do nothing for real evil to occur. Mm-hmm. And so these guys that are out there on the front lines, and often you're weighing your own life. It's like, well, do I really want to do this? Is it really going to be worth it? I might not come out of this. So I think that's the crux. That's where you want to be a hero. It's when you take that step to try to save other people's lives when you don't know, it's not a movie. You don't know it's going to be a happy ending, and probably you have more chances to die than not. Those are heroes.
And yeah. Can I add, I really loved about Mac Decker is that he was an aging CIA operative. He's been out of the field for many years. And I just thought that it was kind of a cool nod to society today that it doesn't matter how old you are. You could still have a purpose. There's still something that you could do. I saw a quote where you said, in my opinion, age is no longer a limiting factor. Dacre is smarter, faster, stronger than ever, and he has both wisdom and experience to his advantage, that you wanted to reflect this fundamental advancement in our society. Like, look at our presidential candidates. I almost hate to bring that up, but, you know, is there an age limit for people to have a purpose and a goal in life?
No, there's no age limit. And I agree, leaving the presidents in all politics was standing where I think you have to be minimum age 80 just to get into the game. But in terms of spycraft, in terms of, you know, military, you know, special forces, you know, these days, I mean, I see these guys running marathons that are 65, running it under 3 hours, doing, you know, the Ironman triathlon in 8 hours. I think that's gone, this image of being old and like senescent at 60 or 70. My goodness. I don't know that the advances we have with medicine, with vitamins, just with taking care of ourselves, you know, just with, we are strong and capable for a long, long time. I'm 62. I'm climbing the Matterhorn this summer. I was supposed to go last summer. My mother sadly was very ill. I couldn't go, but I'm here to start training. And, you know, I'm looking at that thing. Nothing's going to stop me. You know, you could interview me for my next book and you're going to see a picture of me on top of that mountain. And I just think that mind over matter, we have so much at our fingertips to really realize the best of us at any age. You know, I'm excited.
I love that. I'm personally loving that because in your bio, it gave your age. I am 1 month younger than you. And so you getting out there climbing that mountain, that's what we all want to hear. Absolutely. Love it.
And Christopher, when you get up there, I want you to toast my late father with a Budweiser, if you don't mind, because there's a neat little scene in your book about
that. Was he Chuck Budweiser?
Chucky Budweiser.
Chucky Budweiser.
You better believe I sure will. I will not forget.
Oh, I love that. Well, we have loved talking about the Matterhorn with you. This book is not only thrilling, but it's also very satisfying on many levels. And I think readers will absolutely love it. I know that we did. And before we let you go, can you give us a little bit of a hint of what's on your radar next?
Well, the story continues, and I'm writing it right now, but it's so fun to start. So a year later, Mac is with Ava. They're newly married. They're at the restaurant Jules Verne on the second floor of the Eiffel Tower, and they're toasting his freedom. The CIA has come and said, you're free, you're clear, live a normal life. And so he's reflecting on his love for his wife. And she goes, by the way, Mac, I just got a phone call. I have to go take it. And she takes the phone call and disappears. Ooh. Out of a restaurant where there's only one exit, one in and out, one elevator, she's gone. And he has to track her down. And of course, I think something's going on and he better solve it.
Okay, that is so intriguing. And after having read this story, I want to know more about those two. So we cannot wait to read it. We hope you come back to discuss it. And in the meanwhile, readers and listeners, we hope that you want to connect with Christopher Reich. You can find him at his website, Christopher Reich, R-E-I-C-H.com. You can find him on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and on X. So thank you so much for joining us. We have just loved this discussion with you.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
It was a lot
of fun. Take care now.
So Kristen, what can we say? Christopher Reich is a pretty cool guy. He has done it all and he's still doing it all, but he's bringing that world to the rest of us through his beautiful novels. And we can relate to it. What did you think about this, his saying, it ain't going to get any easier just looking at it? Can't we all relate to that through our own personal careers and life stories? Anything that we have endeavored or even thought about accomplishing, it's hard. Life is hard. But if you don't go for it, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I agree. And I love that the Matterhorn is so looming and forbidding and incredibly steep. But we have those issues in our lives. I mean, it's a metaphor for all of these mountains in our own lives that we're going to have to tackle them at some point. And, you know, physically, we see that in the story where we have characters who are looking at it, realizing they've got to tackle it. And, you know, this is very good advice. It's not going to get any easier. Just start. And putting that first step and the next step. I mean, that's how we tackle these big mountains, is a step at a time. Yeah. So I thought that was a really cool theme throughout.
And what did you think about this? Now, this is not giving a spoiler because Christopher spoke about it. I think one of the most noble and difficult tasks in life is forfeiting your own happiness for another. The character Mac had to go into hiding. He didn't see his kids grow up. He left them for their own safety. What does it take to give your life up for somebody? You brought up the world of espionage, the CIA, the FBI. Let's look at our military. They are risking their own lives to a certain degree. There's a lot of levels here, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he brought up a good point, and that is they know some of those odds. I don't think it makes it any easier when you've got your family left behind, whether it's for a deployment or permanently because you've sacrificed your life. But boy, those are important discussions and balancing that you have to engage in when you decide on a career in the Foreign Service, military, or, you know, even here in spycraft. And that weighing, I'm very interested in that. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going into your decision making, knowing those are the potential risks? I mean, that's big stuff. The biggest.
I think it has a lot to do with maybe a purpose, even a calling, or in your heart, you just are wired different because not everyone can do this. Go out there and risk their life for another. And we've got to have these people who are willing to do this. We've got to have these, thank goodness that we have this military and all these people who are willing to risk their lives. Maybe it's something we all aren't capable of, but I do see us do this in the real world. We risk, we forfeit some of our lives. So maybe we give up something for our kids or something for our spouse, maybe a goal or a dream or a vacation. We could narrow it down to money we're giving to the poor or someone. We all give a little something up, but when you give up everything for someone else, it just strikes me as being so admirable and really a higher calling, really a higher purpose. Yeah. And I have to say though, there's got to be a lot of satisfaction in there. Now they're doing it for a higher purpose, like altruistic here. I am doing something for a greater cause. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah.
It's deep.
Yeah, very deep. Well, I would love to give our listeners just a preview of some of the fantastic authors we have coming up, because these are the kinds of deep discussions that you and I love. And these authors love talking about their books on this level because they are thinking about the same kinds of questions we wrestle with every day. So when they have their characters do it, to jump in and talk about those issues is so exciting. I'm just going to read these because we've got some big time authors coming like we did today. We've got Nick Petrie, Susan Mallory, Ashley Elston, Wabgishig Rice, Liza Palmer, Lisa Unger, Heather Gudenkoff, CJ Box, Benjamin Stevenson, Kate Quinn and Janie Chang together, Mary Kubica, Amiko Jean, Bonnie Jo Campbell, J.D. Barker, Dervla McTiernan, Scott Carson, who also writes as Michael Carita, Kate White, Lisa Wingate, B.A. Paris, Hank Philippi Ryan, Ramona Ossibel, and Jill Shelvis. And some of you will recognize those names from our previous shows. They are 2 and 3 times coming back, and we just love it. So listeners, make sure that you continue to connect with us, to share our socials. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok. We are on X. We are on YouTube. We've got all kinds of exciting videos that you can tap into and see. Until next time, one of the best ways to brave the storm, listeners, is to dive down deep with life-changing fiction.